even the image is stored as a key value pair. And this is an MRI, and I'll be talking specifically about high-resolution structural MRI. On the left, you have just a slice from an MRI, and on the right is a volume render, is a rendering of the whole volume, and it kind of looks like a face, which is a problem with a high-resolution structural MRI. But it's really advantageous to share data because neuroimages are expensive to acquire. You have to buy the scanner and set up the room and shield it properly and run it. And it's really expensive in terms of time as well, so it's hard to get subjects in. Because a functional imaging session can be 2 to 4 hours. So it's hard to get that kind of time commitment and then have the resources to collect and analyze the data. But we can increase our subject pools from neuroimaging studies are pretty small, about 20 subjects. But we can increase those by pooling the subjects. And then we can also do meta-analysis and data reuse and that sort of thing. So it's really helpful to be able to share this data. But then, of course, there are challenges. The ownership of data, who controls the data, who controls how it's being used, who ensures that it's being used properly and the results aren't misinterpreted because it's highly subjective. And then, of course, the privacy aspect. There's metadata that comes off the scanner, things like names, identifiers, dates, acquisition details, and some of those have to be filtered out because they're PHI. But then the image data is a little bit more challenging because you have this face, and the face could be equivalent to a full face image. So there are a lot of solutions to de-identify neuroimages. To remove the metadata, it's pretty straightforward. You just delete the data or replace it with dummy data. And it seems like every tool, every collaboration tool and analysis tool has its own solution for removing the metadata. But the image de-identification, removing the face part, is a little more complicated. Skull stripping is the process of separating the brain from the non-brain tissue. So you're removing everything that isn't the brain. And one of the side effects, you remove the face as well. Then there are image de-identification techniques that just remove the face. The top one is quick shear, which is one that we developed where you just find a plane of the face and then remove just everything on the face side of the plane. And then there's also MRI defacer, which erodes the face, removes everything that is non-zero probability of being a face and zero probability of being brain. So you get some different effects, but the problem is that there's really just no consensus on how to use these or whether it's necessary. And the neuroimaging community kind of, they acknowledge that it might be a problem or that it is a problem, but they're not doing a whole lot about it to implement or to enforce the usage of the de-identification techniques. So as a result, we have really disjointed and conflicting policies. And we might be publishing data sets as de-identified data sets without informing subjects, and they may not be de-identified because they might have this the full face photograph or a similar to a full face photograph. And then we're leaving ourselves open to the potential for financial and legal penalties. But then if they're not re-identifiable, if we haven't proven re-identifiability, then we can we may be exaggerating this privacy threat and discouraging potential subjects. And I like to think that a lot of people who are participating in neuroimaging studies are doing and that are committing this kind of time, they probably, maybe they don't care that their face may be transmitted, but I think that there are people that would point to it and say, oh, this, I'm never going to do this because they're showing pictures of my face along with my MRI. But or we may also be enforcing the use of these de-identification techniques when we may not actually need them. And they might actually be interfering with the image quality of the neuroimages. So data sharing is occurring, and if you look at the history of it, there are three kind of big projects that, the first of which is fMRI-DC, the fMRI Data Center, and they collected data from 2000 to 2006. They required any article appearing in the Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience to upload their data. They requested that the uploads be de-identified by the researchers before upload, but they also reserved the right to skull strip and remove metadata where necessary. And then the Bioinformatics Research Network had some test beds of neuroimage data, and they had a license that prohibits re-identification. And then they also have this de-identification and upload pipeline called BurnDup. And they used MRI defacer, the one that eroded the face. But they put progress on hold on this project until conclusive evidence was available for the image data, whether or not it was necessary at all. And then ADNI is the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative. It's an ongoing multi-site effort that collects data, imaging data and other data from multiple sites around the world. And they have really tight administrative access controls in place so that they can ensure that the images are being used properly. And they also have a user agreement to prohibit re-identification. And then the Laboratory of Neuroimaging provides the underlying infrastructure, so they would have access to their suite of tools that includes a metadata removal tool. So, but if you look at this kind of progression with fMRI-DC and then Burn and then ADNI, you see that fMRI-DC enforced skull stripping and required it. And then Burn provided a tool that performed image de-identification. And ADNI relies on access control and user agreements. So at the real heart of this problem is that we have these tools, but we're not using them because we haven't really taken a look at what re-identifiability means. And we haven't really qualified it. And so we have no consensus on the potential. Some people think it's a problem. Some people don't. Some people think it's not a problem yet because facial recognition techniques aren't there. Some people think that it's just so far-fetched that anyone would ever use an MRI to do anything to as an exploit that it's just not an issue. But what we really need in neuroimaging is a joint effort to explore the possibility and to start to quantify that. And we need to do so by working within the user agreements. And so if we could collaborate with the key institutions and have them perform it in-house, then we can start to quantify and determine the efficacy of the de-identification techniques that we do have, because we can't really say that they're better and maybe they're insufficient until we know how facial how identifiable the original images are. So once we do that, we can adopt a standard approach to re-identifiability across the neuroimaging community. That way we can implement practical privacy measures, because I think as it stands now, either it's not being done, images aren't being de-identified, or we're doing so and we may not need it, or we may not be actually improving privacy by de-identifying these images. So the goal is to implement effective measures and then establish a baseline policy, because the three examples I gave of fMRI-DC, Burn, ADNI, these are all big data sharing efforts. And data sharing also happens on a smaller person-to-person ad hoc level. And so we need to guide those and provide a baseline for the ad hoc collaboration, something besides nothing. And when they're flying under the radar, there's no sort of guidance for those smaller collaborations. And then we can also provide clarity for the subjects. And I don't know if subjects would be turned off by the idea that their face may be transmitted as part of their MRI. But I believe that's something that a subject should be able to decide for themselves, and that we should be able to inform them fully. So moving forward, the idea is to adopt adequate privacy policies so that we're not just relying on users and user agreements and adherence to licenses. And then these conflicting views that we have on re-identifiability and how neuroimages can be used, if we can resolve those, we can stop unnecessarily diverting funds and resources into privacy, or maybe refocus our efforts into improving the de-identification techniques. But we really can't make that call until we determine how re-identifiable the images are, and until we determine how good the existing techniques we have are. So The first step is to adopt a stance on re-identifiability, because we could be assuming that images are not PHI and may be disclosing subjects' identities. Or we could be assuming that they are PHI and discouraging potential subjects where there is no threat and kind of performing unnecessary de-identification techniques that may not be necessary or effective. So I'd like to thank the William K. Warren Foundation for support. Are there any questions?
I'm a little interested in the if you could go through the techniques for the de-identification of metadata. You essentially used the limited data set or the de-identification or was that principally how you did it? I'm sorry, I'm always a little unclear on that.
There are a lot of different tools, but basically they just look for key value pairs. There are scripts that do it.
Sure. So they essentially deleted those or they masked them. Is that what happened?
Yes.
So you took the 18 PHI indicators and you masked or deleted those?
It really depends on who's the institution that owns the data, but usually that is what they do.
Okay. Did anyone, to the best of your knowledge, use the statistical methods approach to de-identification?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't. All right. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Steve Herber. I'm with the University of Washington. Your proposal begs a question that you might have an answer to. Is there a national or international organization that could propose to do the work, to help do the testing, and then put it out so that other research groups will follow this?
I think I've thought about that, and I thought about how you enforce this once you create the policy and once you create the tools. And I think that there are communities, I think there are big conferences in which you could get everyone together and discuss this, but I think it would have to come through funding, the funding sources. So I think that NIH would have to.
Okay. Great, thank you.